Welcome back, everybody. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your host, Maggie Dawn. Hope you are staying cool this Monday afternoon. It is steamy out there. Folks, if you've got elderly neighbors, pregnant folks that you know, people with breathing disorders, please check in on your loved ones and friends when we've got weather that is this hot, this humid, and frankly, after a lukewarm, in literal terms, beginning to June. We've got a fine guest with us for this next half hour. I'm so pleased to have Patrick Faribault, the founder and editor of Our Lives, an online publication for Wisconsin's LGBTQ community. If you are interested in discussing the Iran conflict, the Iran bombs, the Iran retaliation, what comes next? Hey, is any of this actually legal or constitutional? Please hold on to your hats. We're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to go to that discussion at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to give all of you as much time as you want to sound off. I know my fine co-host, Matt Rothschild, has got a bee in his bonnet. We're going to make sure he gets that one out. So, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Let's start with the tough stuff, right? Last week, absolutely terrible week with the Supreme Court deciding that states can basically ban trans care for young people. When you think about how to address matters like that in your publication, Our Lives, what goes through your head? How do you decide what the coverage should be? How do you speak to community when there's so many threats and they seem to be compounding daily?
Yeah, I think that one of the benefits of being in LGBTQ media is that I can speak from, or I shouldn't say not necessarily me, but the writers, the people who are part of the community and platformed by the magazine can sort of speak in community, where when majority media or mainstream media covers stuff, it feels like it's almost talking about a group rather than to a group. So I'm able to talk to a group directly using the language and messaging and understanding to help communicate an issue, I think, more effectively of why it is important, the damage and harm that it can do, the lives that it impacts. And I try to do it in a way that centers the lived experience of trans people. I'm a cisgender person. I'm not trans myself. To make sure that they feel seen and valued and know that somebody's out there trying to protect who they are, what their identity is, and that they are valid in every community that they exist in.
What was your reaction to that Supreme Court decision?
I hate to say it. I'm just not surprised anymore. I expect it. I don't expect a good LGBTQ ruling to come out for who knows how long at this stage, given that there's practically a supermajority, or I don't know if it is technically considered a supermajority on the court, but Alito and Thomas have not signaled that they're willing to rule positively on anything LGBTQ. I keep telling people that it is literally a matter of time before federal marriage equality is overturned.
Really?
I think if I had to guess, 2 to 3 years.
Oof. Wow.
So, you know, and I'm pivoting from the trans stuff, so I don't want to diminish what you were asking about.
Maybe not at all,
the
Patrick.
Marriage equality stuff could be another topic later in the conversation.
The threat is really on all fronts, and I wanted to cue in on something that you were talking about, Patrick, and that is like the idea of speaking from within community, that someone who is of community can communicate in a way that frankly can bring people's threat and their vigilance level down, their threat perception, their vigilance level down. Last week we had Abigail Swetz on Wednesday when the decision dropped, right? And that's an example of trying to do that. On Thursday we had a group of fabulous Black female leaders on, and I tried to let them speak to one another, right? Without getting in the way. If you can unpack that a little bit for people who may not, if pardon me for using this conceptualization, check any boxes. What are the ways that, for example, someone who's cisgendered or who is not a member of the LGBTQIA+ community can communicate to a friend, a neighbor, a colleague, hey, I'm a safe place. And you can talk to me, and how important it is to have mediums like Our Lives, your publication, that allow members of a community to speak to one another, that sense of safety is so crucial to create in these most dangerous times.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the question. Like, one of the things that I tell people, and I feel like I almost oversimplify it describing it this way, but if you think of, like, you're taking college French or high school French or Spanish or any foreign language, you have like 101 level, 102 level, 103, right? I feel like the way mainstream media covers queer issues most of the time is checking a box, and it never really goes past that 101 level conversation, which is great for exposure to wider communities to help people begin to learn that trans and queer people exist in their community, and help demystify some of the things that I think the far right likes to kind of turn into a boogeyman around LGBTQ people. But it really is important to have a space where you can talk from an LGBTQ perspective to LGBTQ people, so you can go take that conversation farther. Like, to when I mentioned messaging in my first answer, that was kind of what I was referring to, mm-hmm. where you can actually start getting into topics that are like 102, 103, 104, yeah. to have that sort of that cultural competency baseline that just really wouldn't exist when mainstream media is trying to translate LGBTQ issues to who their audience is, where they're talking about LGBT people rather than to LGBT people.
And I think there's something to be said for those who are, consider themselves allies, consider themselves people who want to support and elevate different groups mm-hmm. of people. It is really important, I think, to try to get past the introductory level yeah. of safe and respectful communication. I often tell people I never want to be captured by the limits of my understanding of how to communicate, because I hope that yeah. my intention always comes through. But I'm always open to be learning how to communicate more effectively and compassionately with people that come from different lived experience backgrounds. And I really appreciate yeah. you elevating that.
I think another important thing there is, whenever someone from a majority group is speaking to someone in a marginalized group, the reality is you're more there to listen than you yes. are to speak. Like, you have to kind of acknowledge that maybe it's not about you in that case, and listen to the other person and give them an opportunity to educate you on what that language is, or how to speak about a topic, or maybe why some of the political and cultural positions have evolved to where they're at. You know, there was a great moment that went viral during the last round of anti-trans sports bills in the Wisconsin Capitol, where there was this really old school Wisconsin cisgender man, straight man, farmer.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Please continue.
He came in to support the anti-transgender legislation. And while he was sitting, waiting for his turn to speak at the public hearings, had managed to have multiple conversations with trans people there who were there to speak, obviously, in opposition to him. And, you know, it goes back to that changing hearts and minds. I think that was maybe his first time engaging with anybody who identified as trans, and very quickly got his eyes opened, realizing that the perception that he had just didn't match the reality that was in front of him that day. So ended up speaking out against the bills once his turn came.
Really? That's an amazing transformation in a short period of time.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I know we've got the audio somewhere in the files, Jacob. If you can check out Dropbox, because if we can find it, or just Google, I think it's like 82-year-old Wisconsin farmer man changes mind on trans issue. I mean, I played the audio because the man's testimony was so moving. Yes.
Yeah.
And he did. And here was the thing that I thought was incredibly empowering. There are two things about one, that minds can be changed when you are open to listening to someone else's lived experience.
Yeah.
And two, he got up and said it, and he didn't worry about saying it perfectly.
Yeah, that was another thing that I thought was remarkable. Like, I had watched that clip over and over. I was there that day in person, too.
Yeah.
But specifically, I would not if you haven't seen the clip, I think it's easy to jump to, well, maybe this person's rural, but progressive still. I don't think he was progressive. I think he was probably at his core raised as a, as red-blooded red as somebody can get. You know, the issue, I think, and what I've been trying to tell younger queer people now is a lot of the ways that these trans issues are being spoken about is almost a direct copy and paste of how the GOP spoke about gay and lesbian people,
yes,
you know, back at the peak of the AIDS crisis and then in the early stages of the movement for marriage equality. You know, they tried to use the same language, that pedophile language or that sexual pervert or all, to scare people. You know, when the marriage amendment back in 2006 passed, Fair Wisconsin had done a postmortem on why the average Wisconsin voter voted in favor of banning same-sex marriage. So, you know, to the point of enshrining it in the Wisconsin Constitution. And what they found out was the average voter that voted yes did not believe that they actually knew anyone, right, LGBTQ. It's really easy to make a marginalized group, especially a group like trans people that are maybe 1% of the population,
yep,
the boogeyman, because there's just not enough of them to fight back on that big of a bully pulpit that these elected leaders have.
But I do think more and more families are experiencing what it is to have a trans person in their family. And so the great nonviolent revolution that was the gay rights revolution is going to have the same effect with trans people too.
Absolutely. There's also like a movement, an in-community movement, where it's like, does the T belong with LGBTQ, right? Mm-hmm. And because one is about sexuality, one is about gender. And the reality is trans people were there for LGB people through every step, yes, of achieving any sort of legal rights. It's our obligation. We are tethered together. It doesn't exist without. This is our time to make sure that we're there for them. And I say that as a cisgender queer person.
And I think that distinction between sexuality and gender and what that means is the boogeyman that is used by so many is to conflate the two, right? And to not engage in some of the difficult discussions that attend to what someone's gender identity is, how it's defined, what our culture places as normative or sort of presumptively how we're going to define genders. Because as I said with Abigail last week, in every bit of recorded human history, there is recordation of transgendered people. Every bit, every culture, every corner of the globe, trans folks exist. They're in every corner of our communities, and they need to be loved and embraced and elevated, not denigrated and fear-mongered for some weird political end. We've got to take a little bit of a break. I'm going to be back with Patrick Farabaugh. He is the editor and creator of Our Lives, a publication that focuses on LGBTQIA plus folks here in Wisconsin. I got Matt Rothschild riding along with me this Monday afternoon. Keep it locked right here. We're going to come back, re-engage this conversation. What can you do in your community to help support the LGBTQ community? Stay tuned.